Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Later in the show, we'll hear from Ames Progressive Alliance, who always bring us very timely and topical conversations. Today, their focus will be on Ames Neighborhood Associations, and they're bringing several guests who are active in various associations throughout the city. First, we're going to have what is now becoming an invaluable weekly tradition. Dennis Hart is here with us for our Friday News Roundup. Whatever happened, if you missed it and didn't hear about it or read about it in the news, you can get the details each Friday on Local Talk on KHOI. Welcome, Dennis.
Gail, thank you. I have not been called invaluable in a long time. I appreciate that, especially early in the morning. Good morning, everybody. It was a busy week, and the Ames Tribune had a lot of major stories in it. On Tuesday, the big story was that a citizens committee had gone to the school board, the Ames School Board, on Monday night and recommended, as everybody thought they would, that instead of renovating Ames High School, they should rebuild it, build it brand new. Now, this is no surprise. Dwayne Reeves, who led the community outreach group and who made the report to the school district, said that in his face-to-face conversations with people, and again, this is not a random sample, but face-to-face conversations, 85% of the community members he talked to supported building a new Ames High. This is not the final step. There are many steps to go before this even gets to the election process. Before a potential bond referendum can go into place, the school board is going to have to vote to proceed with phase two of the project, which would involve getting RFPs, requests for proposals, from architectural and construction companies. The school board would hope their guideline or their timeline is for the bond referendum to be on the ballot maybe next April. At least 60% of voters would have to vote to approve the bond for a new school to be built. Now, the district has estimated, this is not a final estimate, but has estimated it would cost $95 million to build a new Ames High School. Renovating the existing structure, which is 50 years old, would cost about $85 million, plus $30 million over the next 10 years for maintenance, for upkeep, for such things as water problems, electrical problems. So the district is likely to go to the voters at some point in the next year and say, would you approve us getting $95 million in bonds to build a new high school? The construction process would be 2 or 3 years. It would be built on the same property as the existing Ames High School, but not on the same footprint. In other words, the existing school would still be working while the new school is being built. This is going to be a big deal, and over the next few weeks and months, the school district is going to have to decide what exactly they're going to do. But there seems to be no question at this point. They will go for a bond vote probably early next year. Also Tuesday in the Tribune, another school-related story, faces old and new gathered at the Ames Middle School on Monday for the Community School District's all-staff breakfast kickoff. Two-hour event saw about 400 teachers, custodians, and other faculty members go into the auditorium and celebrate the achievements of current staff. It was a rally to get everybody ready for the start of the year. School started on Wednesday here in Ames. School Superintendent Tim Taylor had a serious comment about the recent events in Charlottesville, Virginia, which involved several deaths during and after a rally. He said, "In no terms will racism, bigotry, or hatred be tolerated in Ames Community Schools." He said, "There's just utterly too much of that stuff out there, and it makes no sense to me." That was Superintendent Tim Taylor. Also on Monday, a big story, or Tuesday rather, in the Tribune, about a story that would have been even bigger on Monday if the clouds had cooperated, and that's the eclipse. Just about everybody in the country was able to see some part of the eclipse, but not too much here in Ames, because as you'll remember, it was very cloudy. About 100 people had gotten together at Ryman Gardens. Ryman had put this big thing together where they were going to give people, and they did give people, specially made sunglasses so you could actually look at the eclipse during totality and not have your eyes burned out. And they were playing eclipse-related music. Unfortunately, the clouds did not cooperate. It was raining most of the time, and right at the moment of maximum totality, right around 1:05 p.m., just for a moment, the clouds separated and people could see, just for a little bit, the eclipse, and then it went away. It's not a once-in-a-lifetime affair. There's going to be another eclipse in 7 years. It won't be total anywhere near us. It's going to go from Texas up to New England. But it was a fun event for those 100 people, and I was watching it on television on CBS. They had continuous coverage, and I saw a pretty good eclipse, and I didn't even have to wear glasses on that one. On Wednesday, the big story in the Tribune was that the Board of Supervisors, Story County, had unanimously voted to add 4 new projects to the county's 6-year-old urban renewal plan. It's complex, but the bottom line is the county is going to help pay for projects in the communities of Cambridge, Gilbert, Slater, and Story City, going to chip in about $275,000 to those communities, mostly for renovations on Main Street storefronts. Virtually every one of those communities has a Main Street. It needs renovation, and they're going to get some money for urban renewal projects. Another big story, and perhaps the biggest one on Wednesday in the Tribune, was about the city council meeting the night before, which I was at and which Austin Cannon, the Tribune reporter, was also at. Council decided not to appeal the decision of a state board that denied the city's request to annex a section of land near Ada Hayden Park. The Iowa Economic Development Authority's City Development Board had voted unanimously the week before against the city's proposed annexation of about 80 acres north of the city. The reason, the board said, is that the proposed annexation did not include nearly four nearby non-consenting properties that would have given the city more uniform boundaries. That lack of uniformity would have violated state rules. So the city council is not going to appeal that decision. That means that the property will not be annexed into the city. Also on Tuesday night, the council approved giving some grant money to a couple of downtown Main Street businesses in Ames for facade improvements. That seems to be a very big thing around the county, and it's a good thing as stores attempt to more modernize their look. The two stores involved are Evert's at Burnett and Main and the Quilting Connection at Main and Kellogg. They will get several $1,000s apiece in order to modernize their storefronts and make them look a little bit more like the rest of the buildings, the historic buildings in downtown Ames. That's kind of a balancing act. You want to modernize and yet make it look historical. Yesterday, the big story in the Tribune was about a small rally at Iowa State University the day before. And this was a rally in which students, about 10 students and a couple of lawmakers, were asking ISU President Benjamin Allen and the Board of Regents to reconsider their proposed 5-year tuition plan that would include 7% annual increases in resident undergraduate tuition and 4% for non-resident undergraduates. This is a big deal for students because a lot of money is involved. If the plan is approved by the Regents later this year, resident undergraduate tuition at Iowa State would increase more than $500 in the fall of next year, up to nearly $8,000 a year. It would then go up 7% a year through the fall of 2022. Bottom line, by the fall of 2022, tuition would be $10,500 a year for resident undergraduate tuition. If you're a non-resident, oh my, you'd pay $852 more next year. And by 2022, your tuition, if you're a non-resident going to Iowa State, would jump to $26,000 a year. A lot of money. ISU student Democrat Vice President Taylor Blair was one of those who organized the little rally at Iowa State. He said every single Iowan deserves the right to be able to go to college, especially one of these public universities, because that's why they're here. Again, the Board of Regents will make a decision on that later this year. All three major state universities are proposing virtually the same type of tuition increase to accommodate inflation and a cut in state funding. Another story in the Ames Trib on Thursday, Ames Sewing and Vacuum Center, a longtime citizen on Main Street, going to close October 1st after 36 years in business. The reason it's closing is that the owner and most of his staff are retiring. The store is at 214 Main Street, going to close October 1st. Again, Ames Sewing and Vacuum Center. And a big story you are going to read in today's Ames Tribune, I guarantee it, it's their lead story. About 100 people turned out last night at the Ames Library for a school board candidates forum sponsored by the League of Women Voters. Gail and I were both there, and we'll talk about that in a moment. The 5 candidates all got to make opening and closing statements, but the most important part of the evening was really when the audience got to ask some questions. And as you might expect, the first question involved how the candidates would choose a new superintendent and what they would decide about a new school. Should we build a new high school or renovate the old one? Not going to tell you what they said, but they all had thoughtful answers. There were other excellent questions as well, half a dozen or so, from the 100 people who had the few people. We had 7 or 8 questions. That's how much time was involved. Some of those questions involved student achievement and what each candidate would do if he or she got to set the agenda for a board meeting, and sort of a fanciful question, what each candidate would do if they got to design their own perfect day. As I say, each candidate had strong responses, and you can read about them in the Tribune today, and you'll also be able to hear about those 2 weeks from today on this broadcast, when Gail, who was there last night recording much of what the candidates were saying, will be playing the sound cuts, some clips from that particular forum and another forum coming up. The election is September 12th for Ames School Board. There are 3 open seats. There are 5 candidates, including a write-in, so there are going to be some tough decisions that voters have to make. One more quick thing from the Trib, and that is tomorrow, if you are free from 9 to 1 p.m., 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., you may want to go out to 1800 East 13th Street. Ribbon-cutting ceremony for the brand-new Ames Water Treatment Plant, a $52 million plant that's been 3 years in the building. It's a big deal. It gives enough capacity to handle future growth of this city for many, many years to come. Ribbon-cutting ceremony at 9 o'clock. Shuttle service available for the parking lot north of 13th Street. You can get a free facility tour. There will be displays, refreshments, public art contest, and exhibition. That is tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And the address, again, is 1800 East 13th Street. See you there. Now, there were several major stories in the outlying newspapers this week, the weeklies. The Nevada Journal published yesterday. Big front-page story. City of Nevada embarks on a major undertaking, property upkeep in the community. Nevada officials have been surveying every property to identify problems, and as of August 7th, 125 properties had been identified as having nuisance issues. 4 citations issued. Other property owners seem to be making progress on this. Now, what they're looking for is things like junk cars, junk items in a yard, dilapidated buildings and sheds, trash, overgrown grass or weeds. The idea, to get property owners to clean it up, which makes property values in the entire neighborhood stay stable or improve. If owners refuse, and so far nobody's really refusing, the city eventually could proceed to a process where the property is considered abandoned. So that's the big story going on in Nevada this week. However, there are others. The Lincoln Highway Day celebration, guess what, starts today in Nevada. That's a big deal. This year's theme is Grow With Us. Now, there's going to be a dance tonight, a pie-in-the-face fundraiser tomorrow, an antique car show at Nevada City Hall, and even marriages. Yep, if you want to get married, the Queen Anne Bed and Breakfast in Nevada is going to marry you, and it only costs $100. Marriage ought to be worth that, at least, one would think. Of course, there's going to be a parade, barbecue, a hog roast, and, of course, balloon rides and much more. Starting today, going through Saturday and Sunday, it's an annual event out there, Lincoln Highway Day celebration. Lincoln Highway, of course, one of the seminal highways that was built in the United States, and Lincoln Way here in Ames, that was part of the old Lincoln Highway. And one more major story out of Nevada, Colo Methodists prepare to have a big September celebration because the Colo United Methodist Church is 150 years old this year. On Sunday, September 10th, they're going to have a big worship service followed by a free meal and a program of celebrations. Now, there are some members of this church who are still at the church who've been here for a little while. Want to point out a couple in particular. Mary Presnell, a member of that church to this moment, has been a member for 81 years. Irene Koniger and Donald Wilson, 76 years. Jean Ann Weir, 72 years. Going to one church, the Colo United Methodist Church. Story City Herald, big story this week. The Roland Story School District has hired an architectural firm in Ames to develop plans for a new athletic facility, a new stadium, a new field, a new track field, parking lot concessions, bathrooms, locker rooms, and a new auditorium. This is a big deal for the Roland Story District. The school board plans to submit a request next month for a bond election. That sounds familiar. And that might take place as early as February. That bond issue, the amount of which has not been determined yet, expected to ask voters to approve the construction of both the athletic facility and renovation of the high school auditorium. The football field, they say, needs to be helped out because it's been flooded 8 times in the past 9 years. That's a big deal. That flooding has damaged the track and field surface, causing increased cost for repair and all sorts of things going wrong with the stadium. So they want to rebuild that. And the auditorium, well, they say that safety and obsolete equipment and increased usage are some of the reasons the district needs to renovate it. The curtains do not currently meet fire code. They are not made from fire-resistant material. Lighting is hot on stage and has contributed to students fainting during performances. You don't want that. So that's what's going on up in Story City on that front. And some very good news out of Story City. Story City's fiscal year has one of the best that they've ever had. A Rana Lawless article in the Story City Herald, City Administrator Mark Jackson told the City Council this week, the Tuesday's general fund balance, or the city's general fund balance, is $869,000. The goal was to have a $430,000 balance, so the city is really in twice as good a shape as it thought it might be. Story City has also received $122,000 in hotel motel taxes, the most the city's ever received. So, bottom line, everything seems to be in good shape. In fact, the manager said, quote, overall, it's one of the best fiscal years we've ever had. Good for Story City. Congratulations to you. And finally, taking a look at the Boone Republican News out this week, a couple of major stories on the front page. One of them involves vaping. For those of you who don't know, vaping is supposedly a safer way of smoking. You don't inhale nicotine, you inhale water vapor produced by an e-cigarette. Well, the Boone County Board of Health had proposed regulations prohibiting people from vaping in public places in the county, such as enclosed workplaces, entertainment spots, restaurants, etc. Denise Denton of Youth and Shelter Services in Ames went to the Board of Supervisors meeting over in Boone County and said, told them how Story County had enacted vaping regulations. She said that they were first adopted at Iowa State, then the city of Ames, and last year all of Story County. So it looked as if this went on for a couple of weeks, discussions over in Boone County that they might establish some regulations. Guess what? Board voted them down. So there will be no regulation on vaping in Boone County. But the big story in the Republican News this week, major story, the headline, Boone Group and Residents Voice Opinions Over Chickens in City Limits. Gina Johnson wrote the article, and this took up a lot of the front page, which was published yesterday. Boone residents made their opinions felt at the City Council on Tuesday after a group known as the Backyard Chickens of Boone presented a petition with over 500 signatures about owning backyard hens. Seems that back in 2015, the council voted to ban livestock within the city limits, unless the livestock are in an agricultural district. So the Backyard Chickens group wants the council to allow the ownership of up to 12 hens per property within the city limits. No roosters would be allowed, and a secure, sturdy coop has to be established. Now, these coops must be 25 feet away from any neighbors' residences. They have to be well-maintained, and the chickens must be provided with food, water, and shelter, which seems like a good idea. Noise must be kept within acceptable levels. Now, Sarah Kolb, who works at the ISU Vet Med Clinic and who is a member of the Backyard Chickens of Boone group, gave the council a PowerPoint presentation. Among her PowerPoints, Gail, hens are less noisy than dogs, she says. Backyard hens rarely carry diseases such as salmonella. That's a good thing. Neighborhood property values will not go down if there's a chicken coop next door. I don't know where she got her information on that, but she said that. She said the only reason hens, and this is a quote, have a bad reputation is because of roosters. And I think we can all agree with that. And after all of this, Boone's, we can't make this stuff up. After all of this, Mayor John Slight said the council will revisit their petition after a future discussion. So it's very possible, Gail, that the Boone folks may be able to have up to 12 hens as long as they don't have roosters, because those roosters are really what caused the problems with those hens. I think we agree with that.
I definitely agree with that.
This chicken thing's going to be very interesting over there, and I promise you now, and this is my vow, I will follow this story for you.
Okay.
Good to be with you today.
Thank you very much for coming in. I heard you say you're not a morning person, but you sure sound like one.
It's all that coffee.
Lots of energy. That was Dennis Hart, and he was here giving us the weekly news roundup, which you can hear every Friday on Local Talk on KHOI. It's hard not to notice that ISU classes began this week, and the students are back in town. Some residents might lament the increased traffic and everything feels just a little busier now. But there's always an excitement and energy associated with school starting, in my opinion. So when the university students return, it does something to the town. For me, teaching on campus, I'm always curious about what they did all summer. So I decided to chat with some students and ask them about their summers and how they feel about being back in Ames and at ISU.
Well, I'm a graduate student here in the agronomy department. So this whole summer I was here doing research. So I didn't really have the opportunity to leave Ames. But with all the students coming back, it's great to see. Because all the students is bringing back life into campus. It was really quiet. I didn't like that over the summer, so I do soybean research. So I was spending a lot of time driving on fields in the neighboring communities around here and doing research. We work with soybean diseases, so collecting a lot of those images that can be made into an application for farmers so they can automatically find out what diseases they're seeing in their fields. It's a large effort. We've been doing it for, now it's the second year, collecting thousands of images for these different soybean diseases. So we work with engineering students, and with these images, they can use modeling and be able to put it into an app for your phone. And so the farmers can just take a picture of a disease, and they can automatically tell you what disease it is, what the app thinks it is. David Blystone, and I'm originally from New Jersey.
I'm from New Jersey. Where are you from in New Jersey?
Oh, really? I'm from Marlton, New Jersey. It's in South Jersey, near Philly.
Raya Johnson. I'm from Duluth, Minnesota, and I worked all summer. I had two jobs. So. I'm a nanny for a family of four, and then I worked at Sam's Club. I did it the previous summer, too, so getting my work in so I don't have to work so much during the school year. Being nanny is okay. I know the family really well, but it's four kids. And it's more exciting than my other job, I'd say. I get to do things I like, go to the parks and stuff. So.
And what are you studying here?
I just switched yesterday to physical therapy. So.
And what were you in?
Architecture. So it's a big change.
That is a big change. So you're starting a whole new set of classes related to that?
Yeah, I'm in like all sciences now instead of art classes. So it's a lot.
But you're glad you made the change.
Yeah, I already like it way more than last year. So I was counting on the days to come back. I was excited.
I am Ellie Smith. I'm from Rockford, Illinois, and this summer I did a couple of different internships. One was at a natural history museum that had a lot of live reptiles, and the other one was at a zoo. I am majoring in animal science, so I really wanted to get all that experience. And it was a very interesting and very long summer. Lots of hours. The museum was in Sycamore, Illinois, and the zoo was in Belvedere, Illinois. I had to go in and feed the alligators, and I just had to jump in with them, with my tongs, and have them come up and feed them. We fed them chicken, they got steak, they really liked bacon.
Bacon. Iowans will like to hear that. And how big were the alligators?
One of them was a baby, so she was only like a couple feet long. The other one was about 6 feet long, and they'll get up to like 12 feet.
Did you touch them?
The baby we used for presentations and such, so we would tape her mouth so she couldn't bite.
What do you plan to do with an animal science degree? Do you want to go into something like that?
Yeah, right now I'm really interested in behavior and nutrition, and because I've gotten more experience with exotic animals, I think I'd really like to look into working with zoos in one of those areas.
Okay. What's it like to be back here now?
It's been a while because I took a semester off plus the summer, so it's been like 9 months. So I'm actually really excited to be back at school, and I'm getting used to going to classes again and all that and getting back into the routine. At this point, I'm ready to work, but I still have a year left, so it's kind of hard to get back.
Hi, I'm Bria Bomhofer, and I'm from Storm Lake, Iowa. And I was an intern at Buena Vista County Extension Outreach through Iowa State. And what I did was I worked with youth throughout the county and worked with our fair and did all sorts of different organization things. So,
give me an example of one activity that you're involved in with Extension and Outreach.
Yeah, our big thing was our Buena Vista County Fair. It was 126th anniversary, so but 100 years of extension and outreach in Buena Vista County. So it was lots of celebrating and just running the livestock shows. 4-H is a big part of my background, so it was fun to be back and be on the other side of things this year. I'm excited to be back. I'm a family and consumer science education major, so I hope to be a home economics teacher one day. It's definitely fun to be back with, like, friends and be on campus. It's beautiful, and I just love it here, so I was ready to come back.
My name's Meredith Phipps. I'm from Polk City, Iowa, and I worked at a summer camp in Estes Park, Colorado. It was really fun. We got to travel to a different city each week and meet all different types of kids, ranging from ages 5 to 12, and just get to spend a week with them. Well, it was a sports and mountain adventure camp, so we had a high ropes course every week, and the kids enjoyed that, and then we had just big, giant inflatables that they loved going. I'm studying early childhood education, and I'm excited to be back just to be with all my friends and get some more classroom experience working with kids and getting into more classes that actually apply to my major.
My name is Sonia Harlan, and I'm from Grimes, Iowa. And this summer, I went on a mission trip to Guatemala and then worked at the Science Center down in Des Moines. It was so amazing. We got to go to a whole bunch of different schools and meet kids of Mayan ancestry and learn about their culture and then help them in any way that we could. We did some education work where we worked with them in Spanish and English. We also did construction work because a lot of their buildings and grounds weren't as safe as we'd like them to be. So we helped improve those, as well as hand out educational tools that they can use for school. I am studying anthropology and environmental studies with a minor in religion, so it was nice to be able to go into a different culture and then see how they operate.
And so are you excited to be back at ISU?
I am so excited. I love learning and everything about being here in Ames, so it's going to be a really great year.
Hi, I'm Sarah Bartlett, and I'm from the Quad Cities in Iowa, and this summer I went to Crete to do an archaeological dig.
And you are studying archaeology?
Yes, anthropology with an emphasis in archaeology and classical studies.
So what was it like, and what did you do there?
It was absolutely amazing. The people there were so kind. The weather was nice. And on the dig, we would use hand axes and things like that to dig for artifacts and buildings and to better understand the city that was there.
And how old was the site that you were excavating?
It's from the late Minoan 3C mostly, but it does go into Hellenistic Greece as well. So it was kind of there for a very long time and was reused.
Can you give those of us who don't know the names of those periods idea of how long ago?
Somewhere around like 2,000-ish years ago, but there is evidence for earlier habitation and evidence for later as well. So it's kind of all over the place.
So what's it like to be back at ISU after going to a place that's so far away and quite different?
It's good to be back. I miss being away, or I miss being in Greece, obviously, but it's good to have more of a routine.
My name is Sarah Martinez, and I'm from Jamaica, Iowa. And this summer, I decided to go down to Central America, to El Salvador, and I visit my grandma down for 3 weeks. We did a lot of traveling down there, and I had a lot of fun. And then later this summer, well, right before school started, actually, we went to Missouri. We went hiking with some friends.
So first tell me about El Salvador.
It was my fourth time, actually, and we go down for about 3 weeks or so. And, yeah, we just go to the beach, go hiking, go up to the mountains, visit family. This year we get to stay at a really nice friend's house. It felt almost like a resort, though, so it was really nice.
And did your whole family go, or did you go by yourself?
No, it was my parents and my sister, one of the many. So I was really excited to go. It's my favorite place to go for vacation.
And then tell me about what you did in Missouri.
But we got lost on the trails, so we had to really mix up what the trails specified. But we went to Hahatanka, the state park. And we went to go see the castle ruins and caves around there. It was really, really nice, and we got lost a little while. It made it really exciting. So I'm a junior in mechanical engineering, and, well, I was a little nervous to get back to school because I knew this year was going to get really hard and had to really study. But so far, so good. I'm putting in all the hours that I should. As long as I stick to it, I should be okay. But I just took off running, really, this year, so I hope I stay that way. serious schoolwork. I really need to keep it up this year, though. That's going to be the hardest part, staying motivated.
Please respond when I call your name. Kevin Charles, Jairus Boykin, Alicia Simmons, Philip Valdez, Gabrielle Salado, Latoya Bradbury, Anton Mitchell, Shaquan Sutton, Corey Thomas, Taryn Lucas, Tamia Caldwell, Tamika Marshall, Lauren Hill. Lauren Hill. Lauren Hill.
Well, Lauren Hill may not have shown up for the first day of school, at least in her song called The Miseducation of Lauren Hill, but the students I spoke with at ISU sure did. They were ready and eager to go and glad to be back. Those were voices of ISU students whom I talked with in the beautiful courtyard of Lago Marcina Hall at ISU this week. Thanks to all of them for taking the time to chat with me, and good luck to them this semester. Now we turn to the Ames Progressive Alliance, who join us on the fourth Friday of each month. I want to welcome Betty Baird, their producer, air quotes there. She does a lot of the behind-the-scenes work. And Carolyn Myers and Ann Kinzel, who will be leading the discussion today. Our topic this month is neighborhood associations in Ames. Betty, Carolyn, and Ann, as always, thanks for being here. And I'm eager to hear what you have for us today.
Thanks, Gail. It's exciting to be here and be able to talk about neighborhood associations. Today, our guests are Julie Gould, city planner for the City of Ames, Martin Adelson, member of the newest neighborhood association, the Inez Grove Neighborhood Association, and Kristen Gretteman, member of the Old Town Neighborhood Association. Morning, everybody. So this morning, we're going to start with Julie. Give us the city side of things. Can you tell us a little bit about your role as a city planner in working with neighborhood associations?
Yeah, currently there are just over 20 neighborhood associations, so I'm a point of contact for them, help guide them through and make them aware of what programming is available from the city, such as neighborhood improvement grants and the newsletter grants. I'm also there to help, in the situation of Martin, start a neighborhood association and be that city side of organization and get them in front of city council once they're officially formed and introduce them to the council and the city. And then I can really serve as just a general point of information for anybody in the community. With my position, I try to stay aware of what's going on citywide and what roles other departments are playing in those, so I can hopefully answer some questions or give you to somebody who can.
So I came from a city in California that didn't have neighborhood associations. Is the number 20? How does that fit with the size of Ames? Is that a lot, a few? Seems like a lot to me.
I think it's kind of low. If you look at other cities, it also depends on how active and organized this community is. You know, that varies across the board. But it's not uncommon to look at a city or a community that has neighborhood, if you looked at a neighborhood association map, completely full. Obviously, the issues and why neighborhoods form and what's important to them and what they're doing varies neighborhood to neighborhood. So you will have a neighborhood doing something completely different in one part of town than you will another. But I would really like to see that neighborhood, that list grow.
And of those 20, about how many would you consider active?
Well, you have to be active to be an association, and what the city has previously defined has been at least one activity a year, whether that's an official, just a sit-down meeting or a potluck or something where you have an actual neighborhood activity one time a year. And that's really the basic criteria. If you don't do that, then we do consider you inactive and take you off the list.
One more question, Julie. Obviously, the city is devoting resources in terms of your employment to neighborhood associations. What does the city want from neighborhood associations? What does it see as the role of an association?
Well, neighborhoods are really the backbone of a community. So I think to be organized and have a unified voice, you know, everybody in the neighborhood itself might not agree, but if you can come together as a unified voice on issues, I think that's important for council to see. I think that's important for your boards and your commissions to see, because then they can really address, you know, what the city's doing, whether it be related to growth or, you know, a new park in a neighborhood or park park changes. But getting that voice out there and being unified really helps council and other boards and commissions focus the needs and wants of the community.
Well, those are important things. Now that we've heard the city's view of things, I'm going to turn it over to Carolyn to talk to some of our guests, other guests.
Kristen, thanks for coming this morning. What was behind the start of the Old Town Neighborhood District, the district that you're – or the association that you're part of?
Yeah, I think that the association, they were seeing some issues in the neighborhood with historic homes being taken down, demolished, and they kind of decided to band together, and they actually – I think they started sometime in the mid-'80s, maybe even the late-'80s, and they – banded together and created the association to try and protect the historic architecture in Old Town, which is just north of Main Street. I think maybe the over the fence moment was the house that's currently where Old Town Park is now, which means the house, you know, got demolished. And then after they formed the association, they worked with the city to create a historic district in part of the neighborhood. Not the entire neighborhood. It's about 7th to 9th Street, and then the east side of Duff to, I think, maybe Kellogg or Burnett.
Besides you discussing the issues with demolishing some of the older homes, what other issues or adversity does your neighborhood association currently face or have dealt with in the past that are really important to your association?
I think, you know, our neighborhood association, we're fairly active. We have a monthly meeting. We have a few events every year, and then we're trying to add a few more events to raise a little money for our Old Town Park renovation. But I think that there hasn't necessarily been an issue that we advocate for recently, and we're more just about building community and getting together and meeting neighbors right now.
How do you feel your neighborhood association has changed or shaped any of the city's policies?
That's a great question. As a resident of Old Town, I think I've certainly benefited as a second generation of homeowner from the houses that have been restored. So, for example, the house to the south of me, it's going to be perhaps resided soon. It will be done in a way that mixes with the neighborhood. So the city putting in policies, having a historic commission, allows us to have some continuity with these homes and some idea of what the somewhat light rules are. So it gives us guidance, I think, and helps us, helps the city understand the needs of what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Yeah, especially in the district. And that's where some of the regulations that come in with what sorts of materials you should be using, historic materials, and just maintaining the aesthetic of the older homes in the neighborhood.
And the city has allowed us to provide a lot of feedback in that. So policies regarding the use of materials in older homes have changed over the years. So I think that the realities that the homeowners face have influenced in part some of the city's policies. There's dialogue.
This is an interesting question. This is Betty. And as I was listening to this question, I'm aware that there is an Ames Historic Commission. And I was wondering if that was related to what happened in the historic district, or if it came out of perhaps the discussion about historic homes, or if any of us here know that.
Yeah, I think it's officially called the Historic Preservation Commission, and it's a board of people that sit on that. And if anybody in the historic district wants to do some sort of sizable remodel or addition to their home, they have to present all of the design, drawings, design, history of the home in this packet to the commission. And the commission kind of decides if the new design for the house remains with the aesthetic of the neighborhood and the architecture of the home.
I think it's important to note that the Historic Preservation Commission operates citywide.
Mm-hmm.
For example, so when the Kingland Building was remodeled in the Campustown neighborhood, they were part of that discussion. That's the Old Town neighborhood is kind of the watchtower for some of the neighborhood associations in Ames. I think it is one of the oldest and has been very active over the years. But let's learn a little bit about now our newest neighborhood association. Martin, I understand that the Ines Grove Neighborhood Association is absolutely the newest kid on the block. What did your group do to form an association? What were some of the mechanisms, and why did you choose to do it?
Well, I would say the reason for forming the Neighborhood Association was a shared concern on the part of the people surrounding Ines Grove Park that things were happening to the park without really any consideration of the people living near it. I'm not saying that things are good or bad, but change is always a difficult thing to fold into your life, and when major things seem to be happening over which you have little or no control or input, it's always a little disquieting. So we saw that a lot of the green space in the park was being developed or being proposed for development, and there were a lot of people who have a sense of ownership. When you live across the street from a park for 25 years, you begin to feel that it's part of your life, and when people change it in significant ways, particularly when some of the changes appear to sort of foretell other changes to the neighborhood, like increased traffic and increased congestion, and it begins to encroach on people's feelings of security, and some people actually purchased homes around Ines Grove with the expectation that tomorrow would be pretty much as today is, and when they see the future changing, they really get a little concerned. So I think that was the reason that the Neighborhood Association formed, and the reason why the people living around the park were interested in getting together. From a practical standpoint, I would say the major benefit of forming so far has been Julie Gould. It's difficult to deal with the city structure, and the city has lots and lots of very talented people working very hard to do what city council and the manager want done. And sometimes they really don't understand the importance of communicating what they're doing and what they're proposing to do to the people who are impacted by what they're going to do. And when you try to get information from city offices, sometimes your calls aren't returned. It's difficult to communicate with these very, very busy people.
Mm-hmm.
And Julie is an incredible resource because after you fail, or even sometimes before you even try, a call to Julie. And then suddenly, Julie can follow the person you're trying to reach in while they're having a cup of coffee and sit down next to them, and there's no escape from Julie.
That's true sometimes.
So, you know, and then suddenly we're getting information. Now, it isn't necessarily the information we want to get, but it's information in any case, and that's very valuable.
Well, Julie, I guess you're the newest kind of superhero, the red tape cutting city planner with a cape and with a pair of scissors. Is that
maybe? No, but lack of communication or not knowing, just simply not knowing where to go for information. Sometimes it can be really frustrating, and especially if you don't know the process of government. Regardless of, you know, if it's a CIP project or, you know, whether that's streets or parks or whatever, it's good to have a source to get an answer or find somebody who can help guide you to that answer. So
Martin, it's clear that your association formed in response to a perceived threat. So my question to you is, once that threat attenuates or the future changes again, how do you think you can keep your association together?
Well, I you know, we're roughly a year old, and I think it's too early to answer lots of questions of that sort. The changes that motivated the formation of the association are done deals. We really can't do anything to affect these changes now. Some people in our neighborhood went out and collected petitions against one of the projects that the city proposed to place in Inness Grove, and we had over 600 signatures from all over the city, either opposing or asking the city to carefully consider alternatives that they didn't seem to be. And that really didn't go very far. So I think that my interest in forming the Neighborhood Association was to look towards the future. And I don't know how successful we'll be in keeping the Neighborhood Association active and hopefully being able to act as sort of a representative of the community to the city and effectively help manage change. The most recent situation for us has been the development of a Miracle League field and all-inclusive playground for the park. And City Council voted to approve that. I have not been successful in trying to get information about the what they're actually planning to do, the detailed plans. I've spoken to people who should be able to provide that, and it's not being provided. So I don't know really whether the city organizations are interested in any sort of impediment to what they want to do. And I think people are trying to do the right thing, and they're trying to fashion a sort of a future for the city that they believe is sensible and is helpful. And, you know, I have to applaud that sort of thing. But it really would be better for the people who are impacted by these changes to have better communication about what's going to go on.
Well, you raise an interesting point, because is communication only better if one gets what one ultimately wants, or is communication that important in and of itself that it's useful for a neighborhood association or other group to, as we commonly say, be heard?
Well, speaking for myself, I don't expect that improved communication, as I define it, is going to necessarily lead to the results that I want. But it's important to have some input, I think. I think of a practice that I heard of that occurred in Japan years ago, and I don't know whether this is simply an urban myth or whether it actually happened. But the stories would be told that if somebody were erecting a tall building in Tokyo, which would disturb the television reception of a neighboring building, that the people putting up the tall building would go and and explain the situation to the people in the smaller building, and they would make a small payment to those people to recognize the fact that in some way they were disadvantaging those people. It's almost a matter of courtesy. If you're going to change the environment that people have accepted and enjoy in some way that is going to not necessarily adversely but impact those people, then I think it's a matter of courtesy to bring them into a discussion, explain what's going to happen, get their feedback, and try to help. Now, with the Miracle League field, I think Parks and Rec has tried to do that. They put out planning contracts. A group, I think Snyder and Associates, was asked to take neighborhood concerns into the design of their facility, and I think they have tried in many respects to do that, and you know that's good.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, often we say the essence of city government, one of the things it has to do to its citizens is provide notice. But I can say as a lawyer that the term is actually notice and be heard. So that's very important. I see that Betty has a question for us.
Well, I actually don't have a question, but I'm also a resident of the Ines Grove neighborhood, so I was so interested to listen to Martin. I met Martin in 13 before any of this was happening. And I don't think he remembers the conversation, but I was door knocking. And he came out and spent a half hour on his front – he does remember it. Half hour on his front porch. He was reading a book that talked about community. And he thought community was so important and didn't know how about to go about affecting that. So we had this lengthy conversation, and then this whole – the park changes came along. Everything that happened caused the neighbors to meet. I met neighbors. I have been there for over 20 years. Didn't know. I met new neighbors. It was just amazing. And there are people that have different opinions. Not everybody has the same opinion, and that's important to say. There are people, exactly, have very different opinions. One of the things besides forming a neighborhood association that I thought was very good is that we actually met with two of our city council representatives, one at large, one who is our ward, had a great conversation. One person voted in favor, one person didn't. So they didn't agree, but we established that connection. Second of all, Martin did an amazing newsletter, and it talked about some of the positive changes that people have made on small projects. And third, we started talking, and I can see some interesting ideas that might come out in the future. I don't know where we'll go. But I think with Julie's help, I know Martin's looking at Old Town. There's other places. I'm hoping that whole idea of community comes about as a result of this.
Well, I think that this morning we've had a very interesting discussion about the role of neighborhood associations in our communities. I think that clearly these associations make our city more vibrant. And I really am pleased that both Kristen and Martin are leading this charge and that they have their superhero, Julie, in city government. Before we close, our time is limited. I want to ask Kristen, I understand you have an upcoming event that you'd like to share with us.
Yeah, shameless plug. our neighborhood is having a rummage sale tomorrow at 918 Burnett Avenue. One of our past board members, Nick, is offering up his driveway for the sale. And it'll be from 7:30 to approximately noon.
Excellent. Well, in closing, I just want to advise everyone that the Ames Progressive Alliance will be hosting a school board candidate forum and ice cream social on Tuesday, September 5th, 5:30 p.m. at our wonderful Ames Public Library. The ice cream social will start at 5:30 and the forum at 6:30. And as a hallmark of the APA, there will be supervised children's activities for children 4 and older. Please be sure to keep up with APA activities on the APA Facebook page and the website at amesprogressivealliance.org. You can get a copy of this radio show and follow the latest developments, such as the Ames Community Solar Initiative, on the Association's Facebook page and website. And as always, in closing, we'd like to thank KHOI for hosting the show. You're doing so much to move our community towards a progressive future.
Ditto. Thanks to you all for being here. Thanks to Betty Baird, Carolyn Myers, and Ann Kinzel from Ames Progressive Alliance for doing this monthly update for us, and to their guests today. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to Dennis Hart for the news roundup and to our other guests who were with us. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from individuals, businesses, and organizations in the community. So please support KHOI. It's easy to do. Just become a member, go to our website, khoifm.org, and look for the donate button. Local Talk is also a radio production training workshop, which means you can be part of our team of volunteer producers and reporters. If you would like to join the team, contact us at 515-292-2878 or through our website. And please remember to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as an audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.